Morning. Our scripture reading today is actually all three of the Advent scripture readings in each year cycle. It's something similar to this, and I've always found it odd that these are the scriptures that we start with to enter into a season of Advent, of hope and love and peace. So I'm going to read from Matthew chapter 24, 36 through 44, and we'll talk a little bit later about why sometimes I find it a little bit interesting that these are the verses that are chosen. You'll probably start picking up on it as I read. But about that day, no one knows the hour, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. For as the days of Noah were, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days, before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing until the flood came and swept them all away. So too will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two will be in the field, one will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding meal together, and one will be taken, and one will be left. Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour. May God add blessing and understanding to the reading of these words. My message today is entitled The Hope-Fear Ratio. So the scripture goes, but about that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. And then that's our today's scripture reading goes on to say that the second coming of Christ will be like a flood that's not announced. It'll sweep people away before they know what's hit them. Frankly, it's not the most comforting verses in the Bible. But it's interesting because technically, ironically, they're actually meant to be comforting. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. Growing up, I've always had and always heard and understood and quite honestly believed that the opposite of fear was love. But as the years have gone on and I've come to see a little bit more in life, I've come to actually understand that there's actually a lot of opposites of fear. As a matter of fact, in some ways, the entire season of Advent, which we enter into here today, the entire season of Advent is themed with things that are the opposite of fear, hope and love and peace and joy. The themes of Advent, they're all the opposite of fear. It's difficult to be joyful when you are fearful. It is difficult to be at peace when you're experiencing fear. It's difficult to love that which you fear. And when fear has a stranglehold on your life, it sometimes seems that all hope, today's theme, is lost. Biblically, then, it is actually no surprising that the angels, every time they showed up to greet a human, they always announced first and foremost, be not afraid. We humans, we seem to have this disposition, this dispensation for living in fearfulness, for being motivated out of fear, or for finding fear even in that which was intended for hope and love and joy and peace. For the Jewish people living in Roman-occupied territories during the New Testament times, fear could very much seem like a shadow from under which they could not escape. After being marginalized and bullied around by the powerful Roman government and their armies of henchmen, Hope seemed like a fleeting thing. Biblically, for the Israelites, living in fear was an all too familiar theme of life. Even hundreds of years before the times of Jesus, they struggled under the oppressive rule of various heavy-handed kings. And in response to it, much of the apocalyptic language in the Old Testament, well, it's really just sort of a dramatic code language to talk about all those people who are ruling over them, taking advantage of them, oppressing them. It's a code language that basically says that they're going to get what's coming to them. They just wrote it in code so that they wouldn't get caught. It's a symbolic, and its purpose is actually to give hope in the midst of fear. It's meant to be understood sort of as those people over there that are doing those bad things to us, well, they're going to get what's coming to them. It's simply meant to offer hope to the folks who are suffering. For example, the sun was actually the symbol that Rome used itself to represent itself. And the moon and the stars were the symbols that they used to represent their client kings who oversaw all of their various kingdoms. So-called end-of-time images of the Old Testament, like the moon and the stars falling out of the sky, well, to the ears of the Israelites, they sort of become metaphorical and they symbolize liberation from those heavy-handed rulers. Throughout their history, they used this dramatic code language, this apocalyptic imagery, to reassure themselves that their God would upend the ruling powers that were oppressing them. It's about hoping in the face of fear. Biblical apocalyptic language isn't meant to make us fearful, like it does for far too many in modern times. Biblical apocalyptic language is meant to bring us hope. It is meant to skew our personal hope-fear ratio more towards hope. So how is it that nearly 2,000 years later, we have turned this secret code language into something very different? Something founded more in fear than in hope. From a book series like Left Behind to a number of apocalyptic movies, we focus on the destruction and we focus on the loss, on the being left behind. We focus on the negative elements, allowing the dark shadows of fearfulness to isolate us from hope. We focus on the fear and mess up the hope over fear ratio that today's text is actually trying to promote. We need more hope and less fear. That's particularly true in our society where some news outlets abide by the if it bleeds, it leads style of programming, where the more you fear, the more fear you can induce, be it a possible hurricane or a very real terrorist attack or a shooting inside of a Planned Parenthood in the U.S., the more fear that you can induce, the happier the execs are and the more likely you are to increase your viewership. Unfortunately, there's also those in politics who would prefer to lead us deeper and deeper into this fear-motivated kind of society. And really, considering how much of our money we sink into defense and the war machine that profits from it, we really shouldn't be all that surprised to see the push towards more fear. The thing is, many of the world's greatest teachers and even religions understood very clearly the systemic sickness that goes along with fear and a fear-based society. Gandhi reminds us, the enemy is fear. We think it's hate, but it's fear. Eleanor Roosevelt tells us, surely in the light of history, it is more intelligent to hope rather than to fear. Lao Tzu teaches us, be careful with what you water your dreams. Water them with worry and fear, and you will produce weeds that choke the life from your dreams. And from Indian philosopher Osho, don't move the way fear makes you move. Move the way love makes you move. Move the way joy makes you move. And I'd add, move the way peace makes you move. Move the way hope makes you move. Great teachers and religions have known this and have tried to teach it to us over the full history of great teachers and religion. In Christian texts, the first thing the angels tend to tell us each time they see us is, do not be afraid. For the Christian world, Advent is the beginning of our liturgical year. It's the 4 weeks that lead up to the day we celebrate the story of the birth of Jesus. In modern times, we have a tendency to jump straight from Thanksgiving to Christmas. Retailers will jump from Halloween to Christmas. Skipping Advent robs us of an opportunity. It robs us of an opportunity to have a deeper understanding and experience of what the Christmas story hopes to teach us. You see, at its heart, the Christmas story is a story about something positive overcoming the challenges and difficulties of life. Life, it would seem. Life needs hope. Dr. Martin Luther King would put it this way, if you lose hope, somehow you lose the vitality that keeps life moving. You lose the courage to be, that quality that helps you go on in spite of it all. And so today I still have a dream. When we lose hope, marriages fall apart. When we lose hope, parents give up on troubled teens. When we lose hope, we can be overwhelmed by how much there is to do. When we lose hope, we tend to focus on the negatives, even when we're surrounded by so much good. When we lose hope, we can lose the will to live. Hope matters. So let's not rush from Thanksgiving to Christmas. I can't say that I am always the biggest fan of traditions that the church has stirred up and put into place, but let's honor the church's tradition of Advent. A time of waiting and anticipating, which gives us the opportunity to practice life's essential ingredient of hope. Like I said, I've always found it odd that the season of Advent, a season typically themed with hope, love, peace, and joy, I've always found it a bit odd that Advent begins every year with a suggested reading of the promising of a second coming of Jesus and presumably the end of times. More than just odd, I've always found it a little bit bothersome. Why would they include apocalyptic verses in the lead-up to Christmas? Well, why? Because in part, at its heart, Christmas is a story about something positive, overcoming all the challenges and difficulties of life. And that's exactly what the biblical apocalyptic story should do for us. Give us hope in overcoming all the challenges and difficulties of life. Why? Why would they include apocalyptic verses in the lead up to Christmas? Well, because you see, we all suffer many apocalypses every day. A parent's health takes a turn for the worse. The company lays people off. A careless driver runs a stop sign. A spot shows up on the x-rays. Uncertainty abounds in life. Life's difficulties are at times too heavy of a burden for us to bear. It can almost feel like it's an end to your world. In those times, in those moments, we need to know what hope looks like. We need to have practiced hopefulness. We need to be reminded that hope can overcome fear. And that's part of what I love about Advent. Advent's an opportunity to practice hopefulness. In anticipating the story of the arrival of the child who would be born in a manger, Advent teaches us to hope in the face of fears. It teaches us to always work at keeping our personal hope-fear ratio leaning heavily towards the hope. It teaches us to hope in the face of all the many apocalypses that happen in lives every day. I'd like to conclude with a quote from American author Barbara Kingsolver. The very least you can do in your life is to figure out what you hope for. And the most you can do is live inside that hope. Not admire it from a distance, but live right inside of it, under its roof. So indeed, as the old hymn says, let us all live into hope.